From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan.
And a very warm welcome aboard the pirate ship at the Reeve Gauche and to the Captain's Table podcast, brought to you by Are You Not Entertained and our great friends at Loch Lomond Whiskies. I'm Giles Morgan. I'm not actually a captain, or indeed a pirate, but a vague ancestor of my family, Captain Henry Morgan, actually was one, and his family all came from Wales as well. For 30 years, I have been lucky enough to travel all over the world as a boring old marketing suit in the sports industry, which included having arguably the best job in the world as head of sponsorship at HSBC. Along that journey, I got to rub shoulders with the good, the bad, and the ugly from the world of sport. And having ditched the pinstripe suit for breeches and the red waistcoat and cutlass that befits a pirate captain, I set out to create this podcast where every fortnight I simply ask my special guests from the world of sport to share their own personal memories of being a sports fan and how that passion has affected and shaped their lives. Well, ahoy there, my hearties. Welcome back on board my fine pirate ship, the Reeve Gauche, and for another episode of the Captain's Table. And what a special show we have in store for you this week. Since we all last met, I've had a mad few weeks. Firstly, I had to get that Lee Westwood down to the Maldives, and that was quite entertaining, I must admit. It was a few japes. Thank God we have a whiskey sponsor, is all I can say. Anyway, then I had to get him back to Newcastle so he could get ready for the upcoming golf season before me pushing on to Florida to catch up with my next guest. The crew are all exhausted. John the Parrot has been a pain in the plumage. It turns out he is a squawker, a night squawker, and keeping everyone awake in the small hours as he learns the words to the Welsh National Anthem and Cwm Rhondda. I am planning on taking on Britain's Got Talent if I don't throttle him first. Paul, the steward, is not much better. He is grumpy and he is ratty. And I think I will let him go at the end of the series. I think it'll make for a happier ship. And he dropped a bottle of Loch Lomond whiskey the other day. Thank God they have given us plenty of supplies, or I would have keel-hauled him there and then. So anyway, now that we've finally arrived off the coast of Florida, I am delighted to introduce my next guest on board the ship. He is true sporting royalty. He is one of the big three. It's Mr. Gary Player. His list of achievements on and off the course is simply astonishing. 9 majors, 163 tournaments on 6 continents over 7 decades. He was the third ever player to win the coveted career Grand Slam. His titles alone would take up the whole show. So stand by as we welcome Gary Player to the Captain's Table. Mr. Gary Player, a very warm welcome to the Captain's Table. Pull up a chair and make yourself at home.
I've got a very comfortable chair here on your boat. And I've always wanted to be with the pirates, and you look like the best ever I've seen.
Well, you're very kind. All I would say is watch out for the parrot that's sitting behind you. It looks beautiful, but it's got a very sharp beak, and it may come for you. If it does, I'm not insured, and I just can only apologise. So apologies for that. But the first things first, Mr. Player, this is a pirate ship, and we do have rum on board, obviously, but the Reeve Gauche is a slightly classier pirate ship, and we always try and take the high road. So our drink of choice and recommendation is Loch Lomond single malt whiskey as opposed to rum. So I can offer you Loch Lomond whiskey. Can I offer it to you straight, on the rocks, maybe with some soda water, or perhaps as an old-fashioned? I know it's early in the morning with you, but what will you have?
No, there's no question. The most pure drink of all alcohol. I'm really... I classify myself as a non-drinker, but when I do have a drink, I love to have a whiskey from Scotland, and Loch Lomond is obviously a priority. There's something about the whiskey from Scotland that is just so, so different, and it's a very, very pure drink. And my grandparents, who were born in Glasgow and went to South Africa, if I didn't have a Loch Lomond, they'd kick me in the rear end.
Well, we'll get you a nice peated glass of that. My steward, Paul, who has a terrible limp, I do apologise. Hopefully he won't spill it on you, but we'll get you a drink and he'll bring it back very soon. But enough of this nonsense. Mr. Player, we've known about your golf for so many years. You've been a colossus within the golf world. But take me way back to your early sporting memories as a young boy. Not as a golfer, as a young golfer, but just where you learned, you got the golf bug. I know you are a massive fan of so many sports. Do you remember when it all started for you, that you realised that the concept of sport was something that mattered to you?
My mother died when I was 9 years of age, unfortunately. And my brother went to war at 17. My sister was at boarding school, so I had a very difficult youth, going to school an hour and a half away, coming back at night, nobody there, cooking my own food, etc., lying in bed, crying, wishing I was dead, which actually was the greatest gift that ever happened, because adversity, it brings out strength in a human being, and it really is the greatest gift one can ever have. But I was fortunate, my dad, who sent me to a school called King Edward the VII School, very English, you know, take your hat off, stand up when the teacher comes in the classroom. High level of education and manners, and Churchill, our hero, always said, manners maketh a man. So I was blessed that I went to that school, and I just fell in love with rugby and in cricket. And later on, in my latter years, I got full honours and won the trophy for the best all-rounder in school for rugby and cricket. So,
what position were you? Did you play at rugby?
I played scrum half. I think Rory also played scrum half.
And that's right.
Great rugby hero was Gareth Edwards. I just loved that guy. He was a little dynamo. He was like Tarzan. He was so strong. And had him visit South Africa.
Well, he says that he credits you with his love of golf on the 74 Lions Tour.
Oh, that's nice. Well, the feeling is reciprocal. And so then I obviously watched cricket and golf. Not only golf when I started, but, you know, I only started golf at 14. And so my life was rugby and cricket and athletics and other sports. And so I always watched South Africa with great interest playing New Zealand, because those were the two great matches. And it was very close in those days. But in the latter times, New Zealand just became so much better. They really were phenomenal.
And were you able to watch that live sport as a young boy? Were you able to watch provincial rugby or club rugby in South Africa or cricket? Were you able to watch the live matches as a young lad growing up?
We never had television in South Africa until 1974.
Gosh.
So I had to read about it. And then we had the movies, the news, and then you had to watch it live. And I often used to go, as a young boy, I used to go and watch South Africa playing Australian cricket and New Zealand and rugby. And so it was a wonderful dream and wonderful sports, great team sports. And I'm so pleased that I actually not only loved the sports, but I participated in team sports, which gave me a very good, basically an education for an individual sport later.
Do you think that playing team sports as you did as a young boy prepared you for an individual sport?
Very much so, because as a team, you learned that you were going to win and you were going to lose, as in individual sports, but you all shook hands after the round and, you know, you were good friends, and so taught me to be a good loser as well as a good winner, and to still play the game in the right manner and decency.
And who, as you say, rugby and cricket, particularly enormous in South Africa and always have been, who were your first heroes? Who were the guys that you'd read about in the paper or would see on the TV news that probably South African, who you idolized as sportsmen and women?
Funny enough, you know, I never was a person, I don't know why, that I never really idolized people. I looked up to them. I was never a person who kept posters in my room, for example, of any athletes or anybody for that matter. I suppose the biggest hero I ever had was Winston Churchill. That was my biggest hero. Later on, Mandela and Mother Teresa and Mahatma Gandhi. But I still didn't put posters on my wall. But names that you wouldn't even know, I don't think, in rugby. I mean, Frip de Prier, for example, he was just fantastic. I mean, what impressed me that he was such a hard trier. And that's the one thing that I always did. Because of my upbringing, I've always rather finished second last than last in a tournament. And that stood me in good stead because I never ever gave up. I never choked because of the difficulties that I encountered. Now, I lost tournaments and lost the Masters and tournaments like that by one shot, which is horrifying to lose a major by one shot. But it taught me so much. These other sports taught me so much, and being involved and debating and the things that the school provided us for, gymnastics. It was a wonderful experience. And the day I left school, I cried like a baby.
I'm sure. And it's very well documented that have to be the most travelled athlete of all time, given your longevity and how long you've played sport. So you'll have played golf all over the world, and I'm sure you've been to a great number of sporting events beyond golf. Do you have a favourite sporting stadium that you have loved more than any other, that you've either watched, whatever sport it may be, that you love for the atmosphere and the sense of fan within the stadium?
I watched Sir Stanley Matthews as a young man. What a wonderful soccer player he was. He was just marvellous. And at Wembley Stadium, which was something very, very special. I've obviously been to stadiums all over the world, attended the Olympic Games on many occasions, even captained the golf for the men and women's in Brazil for golf. So that was a great part or great role in my life to be a part of the Olympic Games as well. And then I met Jesse Owens in 1956. In Australia, the Ampol tournament, I was playing there, and I went over to try and win the tournament, which was the biggest prize money in the world at that stage, other than America, which enabled me to get married. And I've since then been married for 63 years. But I met Jesse Owens, and I asked him about Hitler not wanting to shake his hand and the difficulties that he encountered and what he did for the betterment of mankind. It was a very interesting discussion, which I've had with so many different people around the world. And, I've now traveled, I think I can safely say, more than any human being ever, not athlete really, because wow. I've been doing it for nearly 70 years. Now, you tell me of anybody that travels for 70 years, that doesn't happen. They might take the occasional trip. But I'm still very active at 84, as active as I was when I was a young man, traveling to India and China and Africa and Europe and America. I continuously travel. I work hard. I don't believe in retirement. I think retirement is a death sentence. I still work out hard. I watch my diet. And so age is something we're supposed to live to 100 if we live properly. And there are many good tips for living well. And that is, eating half of what you eat, laughing three times more than you laugh, and filling your life with love. All these little things, and exercise, all these things. But it's easier to get a camel through the eye of a needle than to get anybody to think about doing exercise.
Yeah. Well, you've always been a massive proponent of that. I remember it, you putting me to shame in Abu Dhabi, showing me how you could do all your various crunches and so on. I felt very fat and out of shape. But then I'm a Welsh pirate, so I'm allowed to.
And it's a choice that one has. And, whether you're fat or thin or fit or not, that's your choice.
Well, yeah, but I did go for a walk in Richmond Park today before I got on board. So you'll be pleased with me today. Okay. And Mr. Player, tell me, do you love to watch sport? If you have a choice, whether it's golf or any of the sports you've said, rugby or cricket, do you prefer to be at the stadium or do you like actually being at home watching on telly? Do you like to get really involved with the TV so you can have that personal thing, or do you love the atmosphere of being at the event?
Oh, I love both. And I think one of my favorite sports to watch is tennis. And, we're so blessed in these times to have Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer, those three names particularly, who are such wonderful role models and very fit and phenomenal tennis players in the great competition that exists to see who wins the most majors. And so I love to watch tennis. I actually like to be in the stadium as well. But I think, with Wimbledon, I attend every year as a guest of Rolex, which is a fantastic experience being at Wimbledon. But, you know, it's getting out of the stadiums and getting in that I find so difficult. It's not that easy to get out with all those people. So basically, I think that my enjoyment is to be able to sit down with some of them, my family, and watch the sports with television. You can get up and go for lunch. You can you can do it in luxury.
Absolutely. Well, it's interesting. You were a member of the original Big Three, and you've just mentioned the tennis Big Three. And you presumably, as a tennis fan, would you say that the Federer, Nadal, Djokovic era in men's tennis has been the greatest that you've ever seen in the game?
Yes, but I think you see people are very naive. And depending on the era that you live in, like, for example, people forget about Rod Laver. Now, Rod Laver, he won a double Grand Slam. And think about this now. This is food for thought. He was not allowed to play in a major championship for 5 years. That means 20 majors in his prime, he never played. He would have won more majors, in my opinion, than anybody else, because Mr. Hunt, of the silver industry, took over the tennis industry and barred professionals from playing in majors. Very few people know about that. It's like golf. Ben Hogan won 9 majors, went to war for 5 years, came back, had an accident, and so for 30 majors in his prime, he never played in. He would have won more than Nicklaus. He would have won more than anybody. He was the best golfer I ever saw in my life. But It's so sad when you think of what things have happened, and people are very quick to give opinions who is the best. They don't take into consideration, do you live there? Do you travel there? Is your family there? You know, there are a lot of things to take into consideration. But the only thing is, you can't go by ifs and ands. You go by what's down on the paper with a record.
And as a fan of sport, are you emotional? Have you cried watching sport, others compete with it, you know, with elation or disappointment? Do you get emotional about other people's performances?
Yes, I'm a big crybaby. I'm a massive crybaby. I mean, I get very sentimental because, you know, having been deprived of a lot of love when I was young because of circumstances, I have a lot of love in my heart, which I'm very grateful for. So what is taken away in some way, one sense or another, you get it back in another way.
Well, and my final question about this, which might seem a little silly given that you're a man of great nutrition and fitness values and I'm less so, but if we were to go to Wimbledon together and we were going to pop out for a little bit of lunch, what would Gary Player have for his lunch before settling back into the centre court seat and watching Nadal versus Federer in a semi-final?
One of the reasons why I like Djokovic so much, and I like them all, is because he eats properly. He sets an example to the world on how you must look after your body, and your body is a holy temple, and people disregard this, and it's their choice. But there are a lot of things I don't eat. I don't eat bacon. I don't eat ice cream. I don't drink milk. I don't eat white bread. I eat a lot of fruit. I eat a lot of salads. I'm a very different way of eating. I eat a lot of nuts. I eat a lot of cranberry juice, pomegranate juice. So I watch my diet as well as I can. I have one weakness, though. I'm a sweet tooth. Yeah. Although I work out very hard, I'm trying to eliminate the sugar, because there's one thing that is unanimous with all dietitians, that sugar is the big poison. That's what I'm battling with at the moment. But I watch my diet, and I try and speak to people around the world about looking after your body, because, you know, nobody worries about it. That's what perturbs me. They worry about the stock market or this or that. And people just don't worry about health. It's an amazing thing. It really flabbergasts me.
So what will you be having when I take you out for a little bite to eat before centre court? Strawberries and cream, maybe? Or will you have something? Strawberries and cream.
Well, that's not fair to ask me that, because now I'm going for a very special moment with Rolex and at Wimbledon. And they're so hospitable at Wimbledon, and they run things so well. an assault, a treat for me. By the way, I'm getting off the subject, but the way other tennis tournaments, they dress so sloppily, if there's such a word, in a sloppy manner, and Wimbledon stick to their guns with their dress code of white. It stands out alone, and Wimbledon is the best tennis match of all the majors, and the Open, the British Open, is the best tournament of all majors around the world because it's steeped in tradition and history and played on links golf courses, and you have to be a man to win the Open because the weather is a factor and you cannot feel sorry for yourself. You have to accept that the challenge that is put before you. So that's my two favourite tournaments.
Well, that's a great segue, is that Loch Lomond whiskies that you're sipping on gently there now with a little bit of ice are the spirit of the Open Golf Championship. And so I have to ask you a few questions about golf, and you are one of the greatest golfers that's ever been. But if these are unfair, I don't mean it. But what is your favourite Open moment that you remember, either as a player or something that you've seen? Is there a moment in the Open Championship which is obviously so dear to your heart that stands out above all others?
You obviously, when you win your first Open, and I was the youngest man to win the Open, 23 at that stage, you can imagine what it meant to me, because in South Africa at that stage, with a close affiliation with Britain and our whole family tree coming from Britain, the Open meant so much to me. And to go along and win it at 23 and get my first leg of the Grand Slam in, and that meant so much to me. And then you win it on another two occasions, then at Lytham, and I always loved Lytham and their members and their golf course, to be six shots ahead with two holes to go. Can you imagine what a thrill that was? Six shots ahead with two holes to go. No way you could lose it. And my caddy, I'll never forget, going down the last hole, I said to my caddy, do you think, he was an African-American, I said, Rabbit, do you think we can win from here? He says, my little brother, he says, Ray Charles can win from here. So I've got wonderful memories of Britain. I played in the most number of Opens in a row, as I played in the most number of Masters. I played in 46 straight Opens and have attended every Open Championship since then. And when it's all said and done, I might attend more Opens than anybody in the history of the game. May I live long enough.
Well, let's hope you do. And you played golf, I can't even imagine how many rounds of golf you have. You've probably got the statistics somewhere. But did you ever get to play golf with your own hero, be it either another golfer or another human being that was someone heroic to you, that you either looked up to or you couldn't believe that you were playing golf with them?
Absolutely. I've always thought that Ben Hogan was the best player I ever saw. And I never, ever dreamt of playing with Hogan. As it turned out, I played a lot of rounds with him. I played with him in my first US Open ever in 1958. And I got on the tee and I was a bit nervous, and I said, took my hat off and said, good morning, sir. He says, morning, fella. And then we played 36 holes the first of the tournament. And then when I finished, he said, well played, son. So he spoke, he said five words and 36 holes. Somebody said, why was he so talkative? But and then he turned around and said to me in the locker room, he said, you're going to be a great player one day, fella, which I really appreciated. So that was a big thrill for me. I think looking back, that was the biggest thrill I had playing with anybody in my life.
Amazing. And do you have I know that this question has been asked of Jack, of what your dream team, you're a captain, you've got a four ball. Who would your other three be in your four ball? And it doesn't have to be golfers, members of your family, anybody.
No hesitation. It would be Winston Churchill, Nelson Mandela, Mother Teresa, and also Mahatma Gandhi.
And if you weren't a golfer, and I know that is now a little while ago since you made the decision to be a golfer, but what do you think you might have been?
Well, farming was something that I loved as much as golf. I would love to have been a school teacher. I always had a dream to have a great command and a better command of the English language than any other athlete, because athletes are basically renowned as very poor speakers. And I think it's imperative that they learn to speak well, to market themselves, and also to set an example. I think athletes have a debt incurred as far as the youth are concerned, Churchill also said the youth of a nation are the trustees of posterity. So we have an obligation, you know, to set a, to be role models for young people. And athletes are so spoiled and so lucky the way the kind of prize money they played for, they do play for. We never played for much prize money, but however, we do have a debt incurred to show young people how to behave well. And today we live in a very different world with young people. They have a sense of entitlement. Nobody's entitled to a damn thing. And they spend their lives on a little phone and they night and day, and it's the ruination of a young man.
And tell me, when you look back on the your golf career, final golf question, was there a player who was the most gifted that you ever saw that perhaps didn't hit the big time to the extent that you did and some of the others who picked up championship after championship, but just for raw talent, you always thought this player could have done a little bit more and either was unlucky, but just had that extraordinary talent that is so God-given and rare?
It was Tom Weisskopf. Tom Weisskopf in America, he was a better golfer than Nicklaus, but he was a sulker, and he and I have spoken about this, and if he'd had a really good head, he often would, at a press conference, say, I hate golf, and yet it did so much for him. It was strange. His attitude towards golf was the worst that could possibly exist, but he was the best golfer I ever saw that only won. Well, he won the Open at Troon, but he should have won at least 7 majors. He was really outstanding. But you see a lot of those. You see a lot of those, you know, that have got great talent, but talent is only just one part of a puzzle. And people classify people as greats or superstars too early. To be a superstar in golf, I think you've got to win at least 6 majors. So a man like Nick Faldo, he's the only British golfer that really qualifies for that. I don't know how many Harry Vardon and the people prior in the old days won, but in modern times, Nick Faldo, he's the only British player that really qualifies as a superstar. But people use the word superstar and great so loosely. It's amazing.
And as you said, you may well be the most travelled human being of all time, and therefore I imagine you've been to many, many sporting events. Is there one you haven't been to that you would love to go to, that you've just on your bucket list that you go, God, I would love to go to that event, or do you think you've ticked them all off?
I love horses as much as I love golf, and so... But I have been to the Arctic Triumph, and I have been to the Derby, and I have been to the American Derby. I've never been to the, I went to the Melbourne Cup, but I'd like to go to them all again.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't see that happening, but I love horse racing, and the outside of a horse is good for the inside of a man. And I just love breeding horses. That's such a thrill for me.
And if you were there, any sporting people that you must have met? Gosh, I can't imagine there's any sporting great that you haven't met along the way. Were any that stick out? Was did you meet Muhammad Ali? And did you?
Yes.
And how did you find him? I'm one of the greatest of them all, I know.
Phenomenal and such a charismatic man. And I always remember him walking down London with a top hat and his black suit and a walking stick. And the guy he was fighting, I can't remember who it was, he said, in round 4, you'll hit the floor. And boy, in round 4, he had hit the floor. Now, he was remarkable. It's so sad to think that a man like that was stripped of his title and was not allowed to box in his prime. Again, it's like Rod Laver or Ben Hogan. And his prime was stripped from fighting for about 2 years because he wouldn't join the army. And his response at the time, I was disappointed with. But he, when I look back now, as you get older, your opinions change of everything. He was right. He was not allowed to use the fountains of a white man and the restaurants, et cetera, et cetera. He said, how can you ask me to fight for my country when I don't have the normal privileges that you people have? And it took a lot of courage to give up boxing and sacrifice boxing for what his principles, what he did. And so I think that's more prevalent than actually his boxing career, which is amazing. But if I could have one person that I would give anything to sit down for 5 minutes with is Sir Winston Churchill. Oh, you know, we follow, we read his books, And his great saying, and this is a great saying for young people who invariably come up to me and say, what am I going to do to be a champion? I can't answer that. It's called it. And very few people have it to be a champion. But Winston Churchill said something. He said, the height that great men reached and kept were not attained by sudden flight, but while his opponents were sleeping, he was toiling upward in the night. And that basically is, in simplicity, is hard work. Hard work. I was an animal with hard work. I was poor. I suffered. Man, I worked like an animal, and I still work hard today. When I hear people wanting to retire at 60 and 65, I feel sorry for them, because retirement is a death warrant. You've got to keep going and working hard and keep moving.
Well, thank God you're on board, because this is an old-fashioned pirate ship. There's plenty of sails that need to be pulled up and down. So you're going to be...
I'd get bored on that ship. I'd get bored.
We're going to get you to work, Mr. Player. We come to the part of my show now which I call the Captain's Broadside, where I just ask you some sort of fairly random questions. You very sweetly come on board my ship, the Reeve Gauche, and the good news is we're free to sail wherever your heart desires. We can go anywhere. So my first thing is, where can we sail you to? What is your chosen destination?
Oh, you can take me to the Greek islands.
Wonderful. Well, that's easy, and it's not too far, which means you'll only have to endure my company for a couple of weeks. And the next thing is, as for all my guests, for the first night you're on board, you're round at my beautiful table, and we will feed you, and I do take note very keenly that you're a nutrition man, so we'll make sure that the freshest and best ingredients, but we do give you a three-course meal, and cheese is not included in that. That's optional, which is my gift to you. But what would a Mr. Player three-course dinner be that would sustain you for the first night happily?
I would like to start off with some fish, some really good grilled fish, and then with all the toppings. And then I'd like to have, for dessert, I'd like to have a lot of fruit, all kinds of fruit. I mean, I'm a fruitaholic. I have all kinds of fruit. And then maybe a nice glass of red wine to end the evening. That would be absolutely ideal for me.
Well, that's perfect. And with lots of fruit, you won't get scurvy, which obviously was a problem back in the day. And Mr. Player, because you're my guest on this beautiful, well, it's not that beautiful, let's be honest, but it's all right. It's a functional ship, but you do get the beautiful ensuite cabin. And bizarrely for a 17th century pirate ship, it also has a power shower in it to keep you clean and warm. So what song does Gary Player sing in this shower? What do you sing when you're scrubbing yourself down?
Forever Young.
Is that right? Well, the crew are going to love hearing that. You'll inspire them all as then you do your sit-ups and so on. And do you remember your first album, your first LP that you ever bought?
Elvis Presley.
Was it really?
And I met Elvis Presley.
Did you?
I went on the Good Morning America show just when, I think it was the Masters years, and the lady asked me, what do I like besides golf? And I said, give me that guitar. I don't know if you can see me, but I took the guitar and I said, you can do anything, but don't step on my blue suede shoes. And I moved like Elvis. And then I got a telegram. I was going to say an email, but there were no emails. I got a telegram. Elvis said, hey, man, I want to meet you.
And no
so I
want
to
way.
Meet you, King. And I was going down to Hollywood and I walked in there and he was doing the movie called Hawaii. And he saw me and I had a tie and jacket on. He said, cut. And he went backstage, put on a jacket, came out and said, how do you do, sir? And he said, I'd like to play golf. So we gave him a golf club. His grip looked like a cow giving birth to a roll of barbed wire. It was the worst grip I've ever seen in my life, like a man caught on a Harley Davidson. Eventually, we straightened his grip out. He said, what's important? I said, you've got to learn to use your hips. Can you see me?
Yeah.
And he said, the hips. I said, you've got to learn to use your hips, Elvis. He says, the hips. I said, yes. He says, baby, you talking to the right man.
That's so amazing.
I love Elvis. I just loved his songs and his music. It's just a tragedy. It just goes to show, if young people can only understand that he died at 42, drugs, stay away from the drugs and the obesity. Stay in shape. Look after yourself. Life is the most cherished gift that you have.
Well, we'll make sure that. And with that, I'm going to send you just quickly up the rigging just to keep yourself fit. And once when you come down, what was your first car? Do you remember your first motor car?
Very well. It was a Mini Miner. A Mini Miner, and it had a big hole in the roof, which I used to drive like crazy, put my head through the roof. It was a tiny little car sometimes.
Great fish air. What color was it?
Black. What do you think? It was all my clothing and all my...
Of course it was. It was a bloody silly question, wasn't it?
That certainly was. I'm the Black Knight. You good night.
And then, Mr. Player, do you have another hidden talent? Can you play the harmonica, or can you play a musical instrument, or is there something that people wouldn't know that you can do and that you love doing that's got nothing to do with golf or sport?
Yes, I love music and I love singing and I love dancing. And I have a great zest for life. I love going to the game reserve, seeing the wild animals. I love working out in the gym. I love debating. I love to debate on politics, on systems that run governments, because that's our future. So, I hope to say I'm interested in many subjects. I'm not just a one-way street.
Well, you're going to be very good company then for our 2 or 3 week trip down to the Greek islands. And since you've got to endure my company, I want to make it as comfortable as possible. And this is a pirate ship, so we can smuggle things. And I wondered if there was something that we could smuggle of yours that's in your possession, not an inanimate object, obviously, to keep safe. And we could perhaps bury it safely when we get to Greece, that's in a nice pirate's treasure chest for all time. Do you have a most treasured possession that you would want to take with you and make sure is always safe for all times?
Yes, the Open. I have a replica. When I won the Open, Ben Hogan, I believe, was the first to have a replica made of the Open trophy. And I copied and have that replica of the Open trophy. I don't want to be buried. I'd hate to be buried and put in that box. And the worms eat the box, and then they eat you, and you're that dark hole down there, and you take up all the space on top of the earth. I believe you've had your life here, and you must be cremated and get the hell out of here. Go to another better place. Here is for the living. Don't occupy the ground when you've had a life here. And I'd like to have that trophy with me, cremated right next to me. I'd like to take it with me, but unfortunately there's no forward address.
No, there isn't. And I know that very recently that you were honoured with the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which must have been an enormous honour.
The greatest honour ever bestowed upon me. I've had you can imagine the honours that I've received through my golfing prowess, which obviously meant a lot to me. But this is better than all the honours I've had. One of the great honours was being made an honorary member of the RNA, who I have great admiration for the works that they do and what they stand for. But this Presidential Award for Freedom, the Medal of Freedom, because I've done a lot in my life that people are not aware of for freedom. And I cherish freedom, and I realize it's not luck. Luck is the residue of design, and I realize all the thousands and millions of young people that died at Normandy, for example, to fight for freedom and what freedom means, and that I lived in South Africa, even though I had white privileges, I still didn't have the freedom that existed for everybody. There was no real freedom. And so when you don't have freedom, you hunger for it, you thirst for it. And so freedom in my life means so much to see somebody given an opportunity, because I understand what it is for people not to have it, and for human rights. And I like to know that I'll go to my grave doing a lot of things that people are not aware of, raising millions and millions of dollars and changing the lives of tens of thousands of people. This has been giving me far greater pleasure than winning the Grand Slam, for example.
Well, and I think on behalf of all my listeners, many congratulations on what is a wonderful recognition of what you've done. Mr. Gary Player, we're sailing now to Greece, you and I. We're going to take hoist the gangplank up, the ropes are gone, and I'm going to put you to work because you're fitter than everybody on this rather slovenly crew. They could probably learn a little bit from you. So I'm going to let you get to your cabin, unpack, get ready for our lovely dinner later on. It has been such a pleasure and privilege for me to have you on board the Rive Gauche and to the captain's table. And because we are the classy pirate ship and we do things quite differently, I'm going to be sending you our own special type of treasure and getting you a bottle of the 12-year-old single malt whiskey from Loch Lomond's as a little keepsake of you really very sweetly coming on the show. And it is lovely to see you again. And I'm looking forward to sailing with you down to Greece.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I look forward to seeing you in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Player. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Whew.
Mr. Gary Player, a force of nature. Energy of the guy is just astonishing. And his passion is amazing. If I'm like that when I'm 60, it'll be a miracle. They threw away the mould when they made him, I can tell you. For all our listeners, we're so, so grateful for your support of the show, and we don't want you to leave empty-handed either. And so our very kind friends at Loch Lomond Whiskies are very kindly once again giving away a bottle of 12-year-old single malt whiskey, which is simply delicious. To be in with the chance of winning this bottle, head over to their Twitter page at Loch Lomond Malts and follow their instructions to enter. That's at Loch Lomond Malts. Coming up on the next show, I am thrilled to say we have more sporting royalty joining us, but not from the world of golf, but from the world of athletics. I am delighted to say that Lord Sebastian Coe has agreed to join me at the captain's table. One of the world's greatest ever middle distance runners, a UK politician, the mastermind of the London 212 Olympics, and now president of World Athletics. What a show that will be. From all my colleagues at Are You Not Entertained and Loch Lomond Whiskies, thank you for your support for the shows that we make. We're genuinely so grateful for your time. And if you get a chance, please tell your friends about us and get them to find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pod fix by searching Are You Not Entertained? If you want to follow me or get in touch, you can do so on Twitter at GilesMorgan71 or via email at giles@gilesdmorgan.com. So until we meet again with Seb Coe, remember to keep your gangplank polished, your galley well stocked, and your rigging both tight and secure. Goodbye.